It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, lads and lasses of all ages, welcome to the show. It is Monday, March 2nd, 2026, and it is time to get nerdy. Welcome to episode 371 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse. I am Mac, and I am joined by my friend, my comrade in gaming commentary. He's not just the first option, he's also the best option. He's not just a standout guy, he is the Mr. Nice Guy. And for the next hour, we are going to cover topics ranging from news, history, trivia, lawsuits, and everything in between as they relate to our favorite pastime of video gaming. But first, Mr. Nice Guy, it's been a couple of weeks. How you doing, man?
It's been a couple of weeks, and I'm doing very, very well, man. Had some work travel last week, so I could not do the show. But things have been good, man. Been getting back into the laser tag thing. And loving it. Got lots of friends that play, meeting new cool people. So having fun with that. And just living the dream, man. Playing some video games, eating some good food. My wife and I went to this phenomenal restaurant last week. I gotta tell you about this.
Tell me more.
It is the best pizza in Milwaukee. And actually, one of the pizzas they serve there is the best pizza in Wisconsin. And it's called San Giorgio. It's wood-fired, 900-degree oven. We were lucky enough to have seats right at the bar or at the oven. So we were watching them make the pizzas. They put these pizzas in. They're done in 30 seconds. Phenomenal pizza we had. Meat, cheese, honey, hot honey.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm not doing it justice, but like the waitress told us, because it was our first time, she says that the Italian government has like authorized this restaurant to make like official Italian pizzas. And I don't know what that means, but my taste buds were dancing as I ate this pizza. And I went in with low expectations. Like, I know it's high reviews. Who knows how good this is going to be?
Uh-huh.
Absolutely amazing, amazing wood-fired pizza, man.
Awesome. That sounds fantastic. And I am most shocked by the speed with which those pizzas were coming out, because that sounds insanely fast.
Yeah, they say good things come to those who wait. When it comes to wood-fired pizza, get it in, get it out, get it in my mouth, right? So they did a phenomenal job. Great service, great food, it was fun. What is new with you, sir? What you been up to?
Oh, not much. My spouse had surgery, so basically just trying to keep things low-key. Been watching a lot of some good programming and playing some video games, which of course we'll chat about later. Yeah, just making some good things and, you know, spending time together.
Good.
So that's kind of it. Very, very low stakes.
Love it, love it, love it. Well, Mac, on that note, I say we do what we do best. We do what the people came to hear, which is talk about video games. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. Dude, what's new in video gaming?
So much. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to episode 371 of Two Nerds in a Pod, nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. Mac, let's start by talking about one of my favorite, if not my favorite, gaming handhelds.
The Analog Pocket?
The Analog Pocket. Do you have stuff to say about it, too, later on?
No.
No, he says, meaning yes.
But I did hear that they're getting a restock.
They are. They are getting a restock. And let's talk about the details around that. And how the world is affecting that restock. This is on Kotaku.com, written by Ethan Gack. Here is what he writes. It's part of an article about multiple things. But he writes, the Analog Pocket, which uses FPGA tech to run old Game Boy and GBA games at the hardware level instead of emulate them, was $200 back when it was first announced. Then it got bumped to $220 when it shipped in 2021. Now, after years of new versions that sell out super fast, the device is back in stock again, but costs $240 as component prices rise. Analog isn't the only retro vendor raising prices. AYN announced over the weekend that its Thor and Odin 3 will be going up in price too, due specifically to the AI-fueled memory crisis. quote, our DRAM and storage supplier has officially confirmed that starting with February orders, DRAM, am I saying that right? DRAM, Mac? Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
When storage costs are increasing. Based on the information we've received, memory pricing pressure is expected to continue for approximately the next year. In addition to ongoing memory shortages and price increases, we're also facing increased exchange rate volatility and other material cost increased, etc. The hardware maker revealed on Discord. Hardware maker revealed on Discord over the weekend. Mac, I guess let me start by saying, anyone who doesn't have an analog pocket, if you have even the slightest interest, it is the handheld that is my go-to, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But Mac, is this legit when it comes to analog specifically, or did they just want to raise the price? They've been doing this for a while. Some say they're money hungry. Different editions, different textures of analog pocket. What do you think, man?
We know that this would not be the first time, and it won't be the last, that people raise prices, claim that there is an issue that's forcing them to raise prices, and, you know, using it just as a smokescreen. We saw that an awful lot in and around the time of COVID. And I guess the thing that makes me a little bit more inclined to believe these folks saying that, you know, oh, we're having component issues is primarily the fact that very publicly many companies have stated for the record that yes, every bit of RAM that we're producing has already been purchased by the AI companies. Every bit of storage has already been purchased by the AI companies, and with some of them completely closing down their consumer division entirely. So I think this is one case where it is fairly well documented that the supply is being strangled off by those people who are in the AI business. And so a goodly chunk of these. Now, what component of that price is due to this? That, you know, you'd have to be an expert in ways that I'm just not. But I don't know, Lom.
Sure,
I'm inclined to believe that in this particular instance, that they might not be completely lying about it. And I'm not just saying that for, like, analog. I mean just categorically for most of the people who are citing this trouble.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about analog specifically. Like, AYN, fine. You know, I get it. Analog, for a long time, has been accused of being money hungry, right?
Mm.
Now, in a capitalistic society, like, what company is not money hungry? You're doing this stuff to make money. That is the goal. But also, the timing of them releasing this now, when it's been out of stock for so long, having a restock and saying, oh, well, hey, now we can charge people 20 more bucks because of the AI thing, to me is a little bit fishy, because they've had so many different color variants of this that have been released without any issue. They've had metal versions that have been released, and they can price them as much as they want. They priced the metal version at $500, when I'm sure that it did not cost twice as much as the regular version to make. I think that they wanted to release this now, and they saw an opportunity to bump the price due to what's going on in the world, and that's what's happening. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist. That is simply what I think, based on their history of release. Now, that said, when I am traveling, when I am taking my kids to sports, when I have some downtime, the handheld that I carry with me the most is the analog pocket. Yes, it has the ability to emulate games, but ultimately I'm taking 4 or 5 cartridges in the case and I'm saying I'm going to play one of these. It's the most compact form factor. To me, it's one of the most impressive screens. It's not the most versatile. I'd give that to the Steam Deck or my AYN Thor, but to me, it's just the most fun and the most simple. So if you're interested at all, audience, now is the time to get it. Who knows how long it'll be around. Well, Mac, this next story, like, totally different than something we'd normally talk about, but I find it so fascinating as it relates to AI, and AI is a hot topic right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is on GameSpot.com, written by Blair Marnell. Here's what Blair writes. A cluster of lab-grown human brain cells has apparently made the leap to successfully playing a very rudimentary video game without the benefit of eyes, ears, or any kind of sensory input. It's a far cry from playing something more complex, but it represents a major step forward for research. According to UC Santa Cruz researchers, researchers successfully coached their brain organoids to solve a cart-pull problem, which is a lot like balancing a digital broomstick. AI systems are tested on the same basis, but the brain cell success rate is said to have jumped from 4.5% to 46% after training them to perform using electronic signals as punishments when incorrect and rewards them when input was used correctly. So bottom line, Mac, these lab-grown brain cells are now playing video games, they're now being able to be trained, and they are able to do commands. And this is not quite the same as AI. These are human brain cells. My question for you, as someone who I know is very, and correct me if I'm wrong, against AI in game development, improving efficiency, in a lot of things, how do you feel about human brain cells being trained to accomplish these menial tasks and the potential for them to do what AI is doing? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Have you heard of the old sci-fi story, I Have No Mouth and Must Scream?
I have not heard of it.
Probably. It's not light reading, or at least it's not pleasant reading. Not like Dungeon Crawl.
Yeah, it sounds riveting.
Carl. However, I think there was in the, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, right in there, there was a whole bunch of the early sort of cyberpunk genre that dealt with, and I think it's always fun to look at sci-fi for conceptual treatments of things that don't quite yet exist. And, you know,
the metaverse.
Yeah, the metaverse, for example. Long before it existed, we had, was it Snowpiercer? Was that the name of the...
Snow Crash.
Snow Crash, yeah. That's the one. We had books like Snow Crash and such. And in some cases, you know, we also have situations like books like, you know, Don't Create the Torment Nexus, and then Elon Musk deciding that we need to make the Torment Nexus. That's more of a joke and less of an actual occurrence. But the thing I think is quite interesting from a technical standpoint is I think it's amazing what they've been able to do with training neurons. And some of the best work that people have done with respect to computer programming has very much been basing things off of neural networks for strengthening pathways and relying on those same sort of things. There is something there. There is an interesting and exciting new science there. And while I think that we can hopefully put it to better use than playing Doom, while I can certainly hope and pray that it is used for something that is ethical, I see potential, and I hope that they do something good with it instead of do something bad with it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess. So here's really how I feel about this. I'm not against AI. Like, AI, if you play around with it, there's a lot of really, really good things that you can do to make your day easier in terms of data analysis, in terms of spreadsheets, in terms of things that improve efficiencies so that you don't have to do busy work. Depending on what field you're in and what you're doing, AI can really help you. That is objectively true. Ethics aside, right? Taking jobs aside, like if you have a big chunk of data and you don't want to manually type it up, you can put it into ChatGPT and ChatGPT can organize it for you. And to me, that's a great thing.
I do not trust the AI and the ChatGPT to do so with accuracy.
That's fine.
But I hear what you're saying. And in terms of making video games,
that's fine.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lom.
No, you're good. You're good, brother. I would say but here's what I'd say as a counterpoint. But I want to make this broader point about video games. Would you trust a human to do it with accuracy at a higher percentage rate than you would the AI?
Yes.
Like, that's really the question. You know, something to think about. Because humans make mistakes too.
Oh yeah, they absolutely do. You know. But one of the things that I think is particularly important that is reflected very much so in the research of something simple like computer programming, where in the studies they've found that in order to put code out there, that it does not make you, to have the AI co-pilots, it does not make you faster. It makes you about 20% slower overall. You just as a computer programmer wind up...
To do what?
Oh, to program with AI assistance. To, like, write like write code.
Okay, so that's one aspect of AI, right? I'm talking about like organizing data. I wasn't talking about programming.
I use it as an example because their discovery was that people felt that it made them faster. They estimated themselves as having accomplished things 40% faster, when in fact it made them 20% slower overall. It was just that they spent more time working on different aspects that the AI needed more assistance. They spent way more time on the cleanup side, in the case of coding, for example. They spent so much more time on the cleanup side, but that's a side that they usually never have to spend any time on, because their cleanup of the code is so much faster because they're the ones who built it from start to finish. So when it goes wrong, they know where it is. They've done all the upfront work.
That is absolutely not true.
Okay.
That is absolutely not true.
Okay,
because games still ship with errors.
Oh, sure. No,
right?
No, I'm...
So if that was not the case, we would not need day one patches.
No. So, Lom, I am talking about a specific bit of research, and I'll find it. I've mentioned it before, probably 5 or 6, maybe even 10 episodes ago. And that was sort of where the research wound up on it. And I get that it does, and it can fill in. Like, the AI can help you do a lot of things that might make things quicker. I'm just very skeptical of its ability to actually cut down the amount of time as compared to, especially when accuracy is concerned, as compared to if you were doing the process yourself. I think it just offloads what you need to do to a different aspect of the workload, so you more feel like it's saving you time than it in actuality saving you time. That's where a lot of my skepticism comes from about AI with efficiency.
So I can tell you, having used AI just to organize data sets and things like this, and then double checking it, right? Because you're sure, you know, you don't know for a fact that it's going to do it right. I don't know for a fact that I'm going to do it right. I can say that in my research, AI objectively improves efficiency and can get rid of some of the busy work that comes with those types of things. Now, I don't like the idea that AI can take people's jobs. I don't like the idea that AI can put out art. But when it comes to getting rid of some of the busyness, I think that there's a lot of potential for AI. I also do think that game companies should disclose if they're using AI, right? Because people should be able to pick if they want to support something that's using AI, or something that's human-made. So when it comes back to these brain cells, which is what we're talking about, these quote-unquote trained brain cells, I think it's fantastic. And I don't think it's that different than AI, but as this process improves, and as these cells can be quote-unquote trained to do more and more, it will be interesting to see what people's perception is when it comes to game making, when it comes to all types of other things, and if they'll be against it as much as some of these people are against AI. Once again, not a fan of AI voice actors or actresses, not a fan of AI artists, but in terms of removing some of the busyness and potentially eliminating crunch for our good brothers and sisters who are working overtime 2 weeks before a game comes out and not seeing their families, I think that AI really has some potential in game making. I know that's not a popular opinion, but that's how I feel about it.
So, Lom, I have a question for you about, do you think that there is a fundamental difference between processing that's being done in ones and zeros versus the processing that's being done in the neurons that they used to train for this?
In the brain cells?
Yeah.
Do I think that there's a fundamental difference?
Yeah.
I do, 100%.
Interesting. Okay. I am no biologist. So, like, I'm not qualified to talk on like how exactly the neurons are different or whatever, but I don't know if I, Mac, fundamentally conceive of a neuron firing as being that different from binary inside of a computer code, just from like a processing perspective. And maybe I need to spend some more time learning about how neurons work.
I guess the fundamental question would be, can that one and zero programming be trained in the same manner that these brain cells are being trained? And that really was what it comes down to, I think.
Yeah.
And I believe that the brain cells are trained. I believe the ones and zeros are not trained.
Yeah. So I think definitely on a one and zero thing, the thing that I'm familiar with is their attempts in at least binary to reproduce the same effect, and they call them neural network, at least because it's based off of the brain chemistry. So I don't know. It is interesting, though. It is very interesting. Yeah. And hopefully I can fall asleep reading the journal article.
Yeah, so this was, let's see. So UC Santa Cruz researchers. So anyone who wants to learn more about this, that is where this research came from. Success rate jumped from 4.5 to 46% after training these using electronic signals as punishment for incorrect rewards and rewarding them for inputs used correctly. We're definitely going to have to cut some of this in post. So let's end with Mac. You want to talk about Phil Spencer or you want to talk about Nintendo Indies? What do you want to end with for news this week?
Let's talk. Always up for talking about Indies.
Awesome. So we don't have a ton of info, but what we do know from GameInformer.com, written by Wesley LeBlanc, is that Nintendo has announced it will hold an Indie World Showcase tomorrow, Tuesday, March 3rd, beginning at 6 a.m. Pacific Time, 9 a.m. Eastern Time. It will feature roughly 15 minutes of news and updates on indie games coming to Nintendo Switch 2 and Switch. The Indie World Showcase is one of the shortest in recent memories, and like usual, it will air on Nintendo's YouTube channel. As for what to expect, that's anybody's guess, and then they make some jokes about how it won't be Silk Song because that has already finally come.
Yeah.
But the Team Cherry did reveal Sea of Sorrow, a free nautical expansion, coming to the game this year, so we can fully expect the live chat to say something like Sea of Sorrow during the showcase as opposed to saying Silk Song. So, Mac, my question for you, how hyped are you for Sea of Sorrow? And number two, what other games could potentially come of this or from what company that would get you excited? Because some of these Switch 2 releases are probably going to be on the Steam Deck as well, I'd imagine, if they're just indies.
Mm-hmm. I hope so. You know, the thing of it is, nice guy, I there are very few indies that I am really looking forward to, but I'm always keeping my eye open for some indies, you know, just to wow me. And consistently, the indies do. I'm primarily excited, though, about Nintendo doing an Indie World Showcase, because obviously Nintendo's got so much market power and they are so very listened to by the game, you know, by the gamers in general. So I feel very thrilled about the indies that will be getting a bigger microphone as a result of the Indie World Showcase. I think it's fantastic. I don't know what to be excited about. Now, to Sea of Sorrows, though, I'm very hyped for it. I kind of have no concept in my head of what being Hornet on the high seas looks like.
Right.
But I am excited to, I'm excited to find out.
Yeah, I'm going to have to dive back into Silk Song and remember how to play it. Just because it's been a minute.
It's like a bike. You never forget.
But yeah, I'll remember how to play, but will I be able to beat any of these bosses? We'll see. So yeah, I'm hyped for that. Probably 8 out of 10 on the excitement scale. In terms of indie games that I'd like to see, I've been waiting for Mina the Hollower for a while.
Oh, yeah. I think it's close. I think I've heard some you know, rumblings about it being close.
Did you kickstart it, Mac? It was supposed to release on Halloween, and then they pushed it back. They delayed it with no release date. Did you kickstart that?
I did. It was a game that we were very excited about back in the day.
Yeah, I kickstarted it. So that's the one thing I'd really hope to see tomorrow. I'd play it on the Steam Deck or something, but hype for that. That has been our news for the week.
All right. Well, now we turn to some video game history. Mr. Nice Guy, we have had some excellent things come out this last week in years before. Just a few to mention, especially on the heels. The last thing in 2017, Hollow Knight for the PC.
Nice.
Yes. What more to say? I think we can just go on. But 2016, Mr. Nice Guy, another game for the PC, Stardew Valley.
Okay, nice. Not as high up there for me as Hollow Knight, but a very, very influential game. Absolutely.
Absolutely. It's getting a new, I mean, it's still getting updates. They recently announced a new update that'll be coming out. It's not doing all that much, you know, update-wise, except for adding a couple more of the romanceable towns members into the mix. But
sure.
But still, Mr. Nice Guy, one other game, and then a couple of interesting other things to add. I have to mention it, released in 2010 for the Nintendo Wii, a little game called Mega Man 10. Naturally, always have to mention the Mega Mans. But Nice Guy, let's dive into something a little bit more behind the scenes. 2007.
Okay.
We had the death of the Nintendo Power cartridges. Now, you probably remember the Nintendo Power magazine, Mr. Nice Guy, but do you remember the Nintendo Power cartridges?
I don't. Is it related to this Teleview in any way?
No, but I appreciate where your head's at. That's some pretty good thinking. It actually started in late 1996 for the Super Nintendo, which, of course, the Satellaview also had some relationship there. But they began it in 1996 for the Super Nintendo and in 2000 for the original Game Boy and such. And what they were was Nintendo-developed flash cartridges. It saw limited release, but basically you would bring your cartridge for either the Super Nintendo or the Game Boy. You would bring them to a Nintendo Power kiosk, and then you would be able to choose new games to load onto the flash cartridge for playing on your Game Boy or on your Super Nintendo. Obviously, it only lasted for about 7 years, 11 years in the case of the Super Nintendo ones, and it didn't see, unfortunately, a release outside of Japan, I don't believe, which is a real shame. But I mean, I can imagine how it would go instead of going to buy the new cartridge, going instead to buy the digital download from the kiosk and take home. So something cool we never got to see. So I guess in that way, Mr. Nice Guy, it is kind of related to the Satellaview. You were right. Something cool happened in Japan that you and I never got to see. Satellaview and Nintendo Power cartridges.
Love it. Love it.
Well, one last one, Mr. Nice Guy, that deserves recognition. In 2012 is when we saw the launch of the first Raspberry Pi. The powerhouse of the retro gaming community for us to make use of for all our retro, mini retro gaming needs. And of course, Raspberry Pi still going strong on new iterations to this very day. But yeah, Mr. Nice Guy, that's what I had for gaming history this week. It's kind of funny because, like December, November, right in there, end of the year is very big, I feel like, on a lot of the big game releases. And I feel like the first quarter into second quarter of the year is always a lot bigger with cool indie releases and fun indie projects. So yeah.
Dude, I haven't followed Raspberry Pi since I built my arcade. But I'm actually going to go Google it after the show because I'm curious what the more recent versions of the Raspberry Pi can do. If they're more powerful, if they can emulate stuff better. I think the one I'm using in my arcade is like a 3 or a 4. And I'd imagine they're probably several iterations past that by now. So thanks for bringing that up.
Of course.
Well, let's move on to our topic of the week. A segment where we discuss something relevant in gaming and give our opinions on it. And Mac, this one, have you ever heard the phrase of like someone taking their ball and going home?
Yeah.
Someone has something and they say, you know what? I don't want anyone else to have this. It's mine. I'm taking it home. Some might say that is what Sony is potentially going to do with their exclusive titles going forward. This is on GameSpot.com, written by Blair Marnell. Here's what Blair writes. After an initial disclosure from Bloomberg's Jason Schreier, two prominent leakers have backed his account that Sony could be shifting away from releasing single-player games on PC. According to Schreier, that may mean that upcoming games like Marvel's Wolverine or any future God of War sequels may not come to PC at all. These two leakers, SneakersSO and Nate the Hate, have both offered their corroboration to comments that Schreier made on the Triple Click podcast. Schreier stressed his belief that Sony's live service games like Helldivers 2 would continue to be on PC, largely because those titles are so dependent upon building a large player base. But he suggested that Sony may be backing away from putting their exclusive console stuff, like traditional single-player stuff, on PC. So, Mac, this is super interesting because we're seeing a couple different ways of releasing games in the industry, right? We have Xbox on the one hand. We have Microsoft, who says, we're just going to buy as many companies as we can, and we're still going to allow these games eventually to be on PlayStation, to be on PC. We'll still let them have the Bethesda games. We'll still let them have other stuff, but we want to own it. Sony, on the other hand, is saying, hey, in the past, we've allowed our stuff to be on our consoles, but also you could get God of War, you can play The Last of Us, you can play Horizon on your Steam Deck, on Steam PCs, but now it's saying they may take that away. What do you think about this approach? Good or bad for the industry? I'd love to hear your thoughts, man.
You know, I'm not so much concerned whether or not it's good or bad for the industry. I'm concerned whether or not it's good or bad for you and me as gamers, Mr. Nice Guy. And let me ask you this.
Yeah,
let
what do you think?
Riddle me this, Mr. Nice Guy. Lom, you tell me. Are video games art?
They are art, absolutely.
Is art meant to be appreciated?
I would say yes, it is meant to be appreciated.
Is art meant to be experienced and loved?
100%.
How do we experience and love it if we don't have a PlayStation and it's a PlayStation exclusive?
You buy a PlayStation, bro.
Dang it!
You buy a PlayStation or you go to your friend's house.
Ah, if you have friends. Sadly, I don't.
Liar.
But Mr. Nice Guy, no, I think that encapsulates a lot of my feeling about it. I've been very excited and thrilled by what I felt to be a lot more collaborative spirit when it comes to the big game companies of having crossplay or at least, you know, having timed exclusives. And I feel like this is a step back for us as video gamers to go back. Now, I understand why it's a positive thing for them personally, because just like you said, buy a PlayStation. But man, I just can't help but think that I was so excited for more PlayStation exclusives to be coming out on PC for a chance for me to play it.
So I legitimately have not listened to anyone else's thoughts on this, any other commentators.
Mm-hmm.
But if I were to do so, I would imagine that they're going to say something similar to what I am about to say, which is that this is a very, very smart move for Sony, and it is a self-preservation move. Because, Mac, now we have the Steam box that's going to be coming out. And it's going to be able to play everything that Xbox is putting out, because you'll be able to access Game Pass. It is going to be able to play every game that's on Steam, assuming that you don't need some type of peripheral, you know, or the Valve Index or something, right, to do it. And if Sony was to continue putting out their games on PC, it would also be able to play every game made by Sony. So at some point, or at least the single player exclusives, excuse me. At some point, people have to say, what makes our hardware better than theirs? And if there's really not an answer, or if it's an unknown, then you have to say, well, then we need to make sure that our software can only be played here on our platform. And I think that's what Sony is doing. Because we've gotten to the point, like you said, that there's so much collaboration, that there's so much cross-play, cross-progression, cross-platform, that consoles are almost irrelevant unless you just really like the controller or you really like the ecosystem. And if that's not a selling point anymore, then take your ball, Sony, and go home and preserve what you're building for the future. And I think that's what's happening
here. So, Nice Guy, do you think this is a move that is, like you said, maybe self-preservation? Do you think this hints at deeper troubles over at Sony?
I don't think it hints at troubles, but I think it's a forecasting thing.
Mm.
They're looking ahead and they're saying, all right, PlayStation 6 now is probably delayed at least a year or two because of the chip shortages, because of all the AI. So that's one way AI is hurting us, right? And they're saying when it does come out, how are we going to ensure that at launch, people really, really want to buy the hardware that we have to offer? Not just having the best controller, not just having a system where you've played, or ecosystem where you've played with your friends for years, but it's got to be the individual games. And if you can get them other places, it's a bad thing. What's admirable about this to me, Mac, is that they're actually losing profits by doing this. Because they may not release a God of War day one on PC day and date, but doing it a couple years later reinvigorates the community and reinvigorates excitement around that game. So it results in more sales on PC, But also, people may say, hey, I never played this on PlayStation. And this reminds me I should go back and I should purchase it. So to me, this is a very, very good business move. I don't think it's necessarily good for the industry, though.
I will say, in a world where we're constantly seeing a lot of companies make incredibly short-sighted decisions in order to maximize immediate this quarter profits, I think that even if I don't like it, it is cool to see at least one company making what could be a long-term financial decision for once. At least that's kind of how it feels.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, I think that the PlayStation 5 controller is just out of this world. Mm. And some of the ways it's incorporated with these single-player games makes it worth it to play it there. But if I didn't already have a PlayStation, I would say forget about that. I'm just playing it on PC, right? So they're eliminating that now.
Yeah.
I think it's a smart business move. That's my opinion, Mac. Anything else on this topic?
I mean, a great business move to keep you in the ecosystem. Hopefully there's still some way for us, without having to violate copyright law, to play the video games that we want if we don't have a PS5 or the PlayStation. That's all.
That's our topic of the week, y'all.
All right. Well, now we turn to a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off the ground. Mr. Nice Guy, I've got a little something interesting. I know that we're kind of fans of Pokemon around here, so this might pique some interest.
Wow.
So this is called Wonderful Nioran Valley. It's an indie dev out of Milan, Italy. I've heard that an Italian Pokemon streamer named Sidonia, I think I said that right, is the main person behind this and opened Nara Studio that's putting this game out. Perhaps some more information on that later. But what is this? This is meant to be a monster collector roguelite game that's going to be released for the PC and the Switch 2.
No way!
Yeah, that is the that's what they're going for on here. Now, to get the bare minimum to get a copy of the game would be 20 euros, or that's about 24 US dollars, and the expected release date is to be March of 2028, so a couple of years out. Now it obviously has a little banner that proudly proclaims it's a very fun game. We'll see about that. But also another banner that proclaims that it was funded in a mere 10 minutes, which for its original $117,000 goal, 10 minutes is a fairly impressive amount of money to bring. Now, I've got more to say on that. However, to be perfectly honest, Nice Guy, a lot of what I have to say is numbers related, so I want to yield some time before we get into some truly dry numbers. Mr. Nice Guy, I know that doesn't give you much time to have looked over it before commentating, and I apologize.
That's okay.
But what? Anything stand out to you?
There's a few things. I mean, in the beginning you said, what is this? And I didn't want to interrupt you, but I wanted to say this is a lawsuit waiting to happen.
Ha!
It is unbelievable to me that this is going to be on the PlayStation or on the Switch 2. That is crazy, because Pal World wasn't on the Switch at all, was less similar to Pokemon than this appears to be, and Nintendo went after them hard with their lawyers. So this looks really, really cool. I kind of feel like it's a scam. I hate to say that, but at first glance, you know, funding in $117,000 in 10 minutes, did these people have the audience to back that up? This is their first created Kickstarter. I'm looking at it. They have backed zero. So was that them putting their team's money to work to fund it? Or was that legitimately people buying in? I don't know. But this just seems so similar to Pokemon. I think it's hilarious that Nintendo's allowing it on the Switch 2 at all.
Mm. I mean, let's be clear. As with many things in Kickstarter, anything is just a claim until it materializes. So they say they're going to put it on the Switch 2, but until we see it, how do we know it's on the Switch 2? So I think you're right to be a little bit skeptical. Now, Nice Guy, you know, $117,000 fundraising goal in 10 minutes. Can you believe that?
I can believe it, once again, if they have the audience. And I don't know that they do. I'm going to need to do some research into this studio.
Let me tell you, I tried to do some research into the studio, and I can't really find any names aside from the Italian Pokemon streamer. Now, I have seen some people say things about this person, and they have a pretty large following, but I'm still a little skeptical myself. Can I tell you some numbers, Mr. Nice Guy?
Please do.
Let me give you some numbers. When I crunched the numbers, there were 9,029 backers, and the project had $740,826. And I did my thing with a spreadsheet, Nice Guy.
Sure. Did you use AI to do it to make sure it was correct?
Nope. I did it myself to make sure it was correct. So what I did was I went in and put it all. And of course, one of the things we can see, as you know, because you've looked at a few Kickstarters, you know that we can see how many people have backed at a certain level. And so that gives us like, sure. Oh, we know we've got this many backing at this many backing at this, and so on. And so when I go ahead and total all of that, the amount of those backers wounds up only accounting for 633,000 of the 740, leaving a full 108,000, or about 15% of the total funds, having come from not the pledges, but from optional add-ons. Okay. So 15% of the whole thing is coming from optional add-ons, not actual rewards. Well, the add-ons themselves, they only have a few add-on options between either $14 or up to basically $60. The $60 is like a, you know, like an art book. $50 is like a hoodie. $14 is like some stickers and or an enameled pen or something. And so the add-ons are a whole black box. I have no idea who picked those or what rate, but if we assume that you only picked one add-on, and I know that's a big assumption, and we assume it's the middle cost choice, 3,600 backers must have also gotten themselves in a t-shirt. Or if we assume everyone got an art book, then that's 1,500 of them. Or if everybody got stickers, that's 8,000. Anyway, these are all assumptions, but basically there is 15% of the total is money that they got from add-ons, which seems a little sus to me, as the kids would say. The whole thing seems a little sus. And Mr. Nice Guy, I'm right there with you. I think you are right to be concerned about this project going the distance for a number of reasons. I think you're spot on with your analysis that maybe, you know, Nintendo might have something to say about this. And I also think that I think that there is some reason to believe that maybe the funding is overstated in this. Because after all, what is a Kickstarter but just people pledging money? And, you know, line goes up, looks really, really good for a crowdfunding project, but those dollars aren't in hand yet, so nothing is set in stone.
Yeah.
But also, Mr. Nice Guy, there's no playable demo to this thing, so, like, how can we evaluate whether or not this thing can even do it? All we have is fancy renders. We don't have a game yet.
It looks really, really good.
It does.
I mean, my advice would be don't give these people your money.
Same.
If you really, really are excited, follow them on social media.
Yeah.
And don't even like click the follow button. Just like check their page every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 years from now, when the game is supposed to be out, see if it's really out.
Yeah.
And just buy it.
I mean, I'm not saying that I have any special insight into this project specifically, but Nice Guy and I, we've been doing this for quite some time. And Nice Guy is dead on accurate about predicting many of the Kickstarters that we see come through these doors.
We're a team. We both are. Together.
It's true. We work as a team, and we do a good job balancing that out. We usually nail it. And so I think both of us, you know, don't think this will go the distance for a variety of reasons. So, yeah, we'll keep an eye, and we wish everybody the best. But kick this out of here. There's just too many questions.
Yeah, let's kick it out. On that note, I say we move on.
Yeah, let's
do a little segment we like to call Nerd Flex.
Woohoo.
A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the host. Sometimes you do, sometimes you do not. Mac, we have some questions from our test bank today, and if you're here live and want to put a multiple choice question in the chat, let us know. Mac has something he wants to say first, though.
We do, Mr. Nice Guy. It's also time for us to say goodbye to an old sound test and welcome in a new one. Out with the old, in with the new, as we always say. or we said it once. We say goodbye to the sound test from episode 331. And nice guy, I sent it to you already. Would you do us the kindness of giving the final guess on episode 331's sound test?
Yeah, I got this pulled up here, I think.
Come back when you get some money, buddy.
Wow, what game could that be from? Something where there's a carnival game or some type of... I'm going to go with like Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Solid, solid choice. But Mr. Nice Guy, I am sad to inform you that it is in fact BioShock 2.
Interesting.
Yes.
BioShock 2. I should have played through it all the way.
Because it's been so long, but I seem to recall that that there was also the Circus of Values. I seem to recall it also being in BioShock 1, but that specific voice thing came from BioShock 2. So, yeah, and now that we've said goodbye to that, that one's no longer claimable. Now this new one for episode 371... All right, good luck and claim your prize by correctly identifying it. Nerdflex time, yeah?
Yeah, let's do it. So, Mac, we're going to the Trivia Test Bank to start. And this first one, not one that we've done before. Special round. Name two. It says name two.
Yeah, well, at least two, yeah?
At least two. Two tower defense games, Mac.
Okay, so I can think of a couple of my favorites. I really like Gemcraft. That's one. And
I can't think of any right now.
Really?
I'll be honest with
you. Okay.
Well, I can think of one. I can think of like Dungeon Defenders.
Yeah. 100%. Let's see. Creeper World, that whole group of games, that's all tower defense. Bloons, was it Bloons TD? For the TD stands for tower defense.
Yeah, it was.
That's all I can think of at the moment. I'm sure.
Well, that's two. I'm not a big tower defense guy. So here's what we got. Wow, okay, all the ones you named. Bloons, it says Balloons on here. I think it's meant to say Bloons. Bloons, TD, Creeper World, and Gemcraft. That's the three that it has on
nice.
Here. There's a lot out there. We don't hate tower defenses. If you're into them, let us know some more. All right, next question. Okay, JRPG question. What is the PlayStation sequel to Chrono Trigger called? I think I know the answer here. I'm not 100% sure.
I definitely know the answer.
Is it Chrono Cross?
Yeah, 100% nice guy.
Boom. Boom. That's easy. That's an easy one. All right, we're two for two. Let's do our third question of the show. This is Zelda question. What song must Link play to summon the great fairies in Ocarina of Time? I have no idea. Do you know the answer to that one?
I'm pretty sure it's Zelda's Lullaby is what it's called, but if you want to be technical, it's like the Hyrule, it's like the royal family song or something like that, but she calls it her lullaby. Anyway.
Okay, let's see what the answer is, because I don't have any idea, so I trust you. Yeah, it is indeed called Zelda's Lullaby. You didn't have to get so technical, Mac. Very simple. Dude, we went 3 for 3. It's been a minute since we went 3 for 3 on this, so well done, and that's been our Nerdflex for the week.
All right, well, now we turn to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
As you know, I'm not a lawyer, not here, not in the UK, not in space, but I do know a little bit about some things. And what I do know is that this week, Mr. Nice Guy, we heard about some interesting claims. This is a developing lawsuit, Mr. Nice Guy, and it is in the United States, and it relates to loot boxes. What is a little bit different, though, is that it's not people suing a game company because, oh, our son spent so much on loot boxes. But rather, this is a whole state suing Valve because loot boxes are gambling.
It's a class action, it sounds like.
Well, no, this one's being spearheaded by the state itself, by the State Attorney General of New York, Letitia James, against Valve. Now, Nice Guy, obviously, what we have currently is we have the suit. And I've got a couple tidbits that I'd like to just read about the various claims. But Nice Guy, I was curious about what you think about loot boxes generally and whether or not you consider them to be gambling.
Like, really, this comes down to what your definition of gambling is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of the most simple but not fully accurate definitions is trying to get something for nothing, which is not 100% accurate because sometimes there is skill involved in gambling,
mm-hmm.
right? It's a game of chance. You can do things to improve your odds.
Yeah.
And so if that's the case, yeah, it's a gamble going for loot boxes, right?
Yeah, then again, but not all things that are clearly gambling, or that I think most of us agree are gambling, like the one-armed bandit, like the slot machines, definitely gambling. No skill involved in that, unless I deeply misunderstand the nature of slot machines.
Yeah, so I guess my answer, and this is going to be a lame answer, yes, it's gambling, but not in the traditional sense. I don't think that they need to be regulated to the same extent that slot machines do, but I do, or that you need to be 18 or 21 to do it, but I do think it's gambling to a certain extent. Yeah.
Obviously, the New York may or may not in this suit may or may not be in line with our personal perspectives on loot boxes, on gambling, but they do make some interesting claims about loot boxes, specifically with respect to Valve, that are interesting and things that, because I'm not in that sphere, when reading through this was the first time I had seen it. Now, I'm not going to focus too much on their claims, like claims number 4, which is subtitled Valve's loot boxes pose the same dangers as casino gambling, especially for children. Because I think that very much is a sort of, I think that's going to be a back and forth commentary, expert witness, and
sure,
all that. We'll hear more about that. But one thing that I think is a fairly well put forward point here in this suit, or in this complaint, but not something I had seen before, is their talk about how Valve's virtual items have value. And this is part of their build-up to why it's gambling.
Interesting.
Because if it doesn't have value, how can it be gambling?
Yeah.
And they kind of do this thing where they where Valve is sort of hoisted by its own petard, as they like to say, where they talk about how Valve has built its platform to enable people to sell virtual items that they've won on the Steam marketplace. And they also go to lengths to show you like what price histories are like, how much money you can get for this item, this cosmetic item that you won in a loot box, how much money you can get for it now versus how it's been doing in the past. And they very much show this as a sort of proof positive or a thing where we can be like, hey, Valve acknowledges that the digital items aren't valueless. If they thought they were valueless, then Valve would not go to such great lengths to convince you of the value that they have to set up a whole
sure.
marketplace. And it's one of the things that I actually, you know, have to sheepishly admit, I had never really thought of before. It had never registered in my mind until reading through this in it. And I have no idea where it's going to go, Mr. Nice Guy, but I think I wanted to share with you and share with everybody else that Mac learned a little something about gambling and loot boxes and stuff today. And now that cursed knowledge I bequeath on to you.
Appreciate that.
But yeah, we'll see where it goes. I'll let you know, as with every lawsuit like this, it's going to be years before we wind up finding out more interesting things. Don't forget the Epic v. Apple and Google stuff. That took 3+ years or so to get to the end of the road on that and find out. But this is at least the beginning, and it's a, you know, little bit of legalese.
There it is. There it is. Love it, Mac. Well, hey, before we go,
yeah,
thank you for tuning in, everyone. We appreciate you for listening every week. And we want to leave you with what we're watching and what we've been playing, Mac, because we're always looking for cool stuff. And we want to share the cool stuff we've been doing. So, Mac, What have you been watching and playing over the past couple weeks?
I have been watching a lot of Abbott Elementary. Have you seen that show?
Dude, it's so funny. It's so funny, dude. It's a great show.
I started watching it, you know, last week, being absolutely demolished by having all of my foibles exposed in the character of Mr. C is absolutely my fate. I feel maligned when I watch Abbott Elementary, because how dare you make fun of me in such a pointed, brilliant way? Every single character flaw that I have fully on display in this one singular person, and I feel seen and not in a good way. No, I love the show, Mr. Nice Guy, and I have just been consuming it. We've been watching it, and yeah, I'm excited for just hit season 3, excited to get farther in it. So that's why I've been watching almost exclusively. As for playing, I started up and beat Viewfinder recently.
Nice.
Had a great time with that. If you liked Portal, I think you will love Viewfinder. Different, but has so much in common. And yeah, that's what I've been into.
Nice.
A certain post-surgery spouse has been reading a copy of Dungeon Crawler Carl that I just happened to have kicking around my house. So, and is loving it. Anyway, what about you, dude? What have you been into?
I was going to say, what's your spouse's honest opinion? But you already answered the question. So, it is a very, very good book. And, without going too much into it, I think politically has a lot of really cool messages as well in that book. So check that out if you like that type of nerdy stuff. As far as watching and playing, so one game that I've been playing a decent amount this past few days is Marathon, which, as you know, all of you who are listening probably know, that is Bungie's new looter shooter, extraction shooter that will be launching on the 5th. And it was in beta this weekend, played that, had a good time with it. Don't know if I'll pick it up. A little bit too bright for me, and I like Arc Raiders, but good game. I think it has a future, and more stuff in the space means more competition. So check that out if it's your thing. As far as watching, Mac, still doing the Stranger Things watch through with the family, and we are now on season 4. I haven't seen season 5 yet, believe it or not, so rewatched it, excited to finally watch season 5, and that'll be it. And Mac, why don't you take us home, my friend?
All right. Thanks, everybody, for coming out to the show, for helping make episode 371 what it was. We appreciate you being here and hope that we will catch you next week, whether that is listening to us after the fact on whatever podcatcher you have. Please vote rank us highly, or here for the live show at twitch.tv/tunersinapod on most Mondays at 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central. You guys are excellent. Remember, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, keep it nerdy and be excellent to each other. Bye.
Be kind. Deuces.